Hello and welcome to Leadership Amplified. It's great to have you here. The idea of the podcast is to inspire leaders to get more impact with their teams, to promote inclusion, and to make leadership more satisfying. It showcases exemplary leaders like today's guest, Simon Duke, as well as thought leaders. And the idea is to introduce them to you, to give them the opportunity to tell their stories, and to provide some lessons about how to make leadership, as I said, both more satisfying as well as easier. So today's guest, Simon Duke, is currently the operations manager of Adventure Pathways at Baptist Care. Prior to that, he had an acting director, corporate and community services role at the Alice Springs Town Council, where he worked for a number of years. Prior to that, he worked at World Vision Australia, and he's worked in Indigenous communities, in Alice Springs, starting his role, in his current field as CEO of a Nipapana Community Incorporated again in Alice Springs. Simon likes to swim in the deep end, as he says, and to work with others towards achieving successful outcomes. He loves to embrace challenge and to see other people succeed and grow. He believes in communicating things that matter in a compelling way and connecting on a human level. Simon, thank you very much for agreeing to be a part of the Leadership Amplified podcast. It's a real delight to have this conversation with you.
My pleasure, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Excellent, excellent. So let's get started with the usual question for Leadership Amplified, which is tell us about your own leadership career and journey and what it is that got you to where you are today.
Yeah, sure. So, Karen, I think for me, like that probably started in primary school in terms of, in a natural sense, gravitating towards, student council roles and captains of teams and etc. But then a lot of I suppose formational leadership development for me happened with leading volunteers. So that was mostly in a church setting, but also doing various community service initiatives, and that was really helpful for me in terms of. I think for anyone who is leading teams of volunteers, even now, they would relate to the challenge of leading a team of people who are giving up their own time, their own energy. There's no money in it for them. It's all for the cause and the thing that you're working towards together that you believe in. So that was helpful. And then in terms of career and work. In some ways, almost by accident, I, in my mid-20s, had the opportunity to be the CEO of a small Aboriginal run council. So that was Nipapana Community Incorporated in the Northern Flinders Ranges. And before that, I'd been in the building industry, started my own business, and really enjoyed the work and the money. But did have a sense of wanting to do something to serve a bigger purpose, and this was a great opportunity to do that. And one thing about that role though is my wife and I, we were the only non-Aboriginal couple living in the community. There was wonderful elders there who took us under their wing, but also who had no problem letting you know who was really in charge. And so here I was having this wonderful title of CEO, and from an administrative point of view and organizationally, doing all of those things, but reporting to an Aboriginal board, and also having Aboriginal staff who had lived there their whole lives and intended to live there for the rest of their lives. And so in terms of so how was this going to work? How was I going to be effective? You're forced very quickly to listen really well, to work out, what can I bring or how can I lead in a way that helps you as the team or as the board or as the local community achieve the things that you're really wanting to achieve for your community. There's a sense for them of like extremely high ownership. They're through thick and thin. And here I was as a leader wanting to move the ball forwards, but also having to be realistic about, you know, what could I really achieve and what was the best way to do that. And halfway through my time there, I also had something in me which realized, hey, I know how to attract resources. There's lots of momentum here where, you know, all the numbers are going in the right direction. We're kicking some goals, but was really stirred actually to study a master's in community development. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it back then, but as I look back now, I think, there's a hint of an embedded kind of servant leadership philosophy back there, in terms of understanding that in any role I have as a leader, how do I best serve the organization, but also the team that is serving the organization, mm-hmm. essentially the communities or the people or the customers, depending on your context. So that was that. And
you've talked about school, and then you've talked about briefly about being in the building industry, and then all of a sudden you're CEO of this small organization. But that's such a huge transition. From sort of being a bit entrepreneurial, running your business, and then there you are in this very different community. How did that happen, and how did you really manage that transition?
Sure. Good question. I think for me, like just coming back to primary school, even like that was in Alice Springs. I suppose interacting with Aboriginal communities and people was, it felt normal to me in that sense. But probably the big transition was that running my own business, dealing with contractors or subbies or even your own staff, there's probably a little bit more of a directive element. The relationship can be very transactional. You know, you do your work for me at a certain standard in a certain time frame, I'll give you this money, and we're all happy.
Whereas, hopefully.
a really helpful thing that that the people at Nepabunna taught me was they introduced a lot of grey into my black and white worldview. And I'd say even from a leadership perspective, like the volunteer leadership stuff had really helped me. So I had at that time, around that when I was 20 years old, leading teams around 50 people and sort of planting this community outreach thing in other locations with other people and their teams. And but that was still in a one-dimensional cultural context. And so I suppose I was fortunate in a way, and I think one reason the role went well at Nepabunna was I had to listen to survive. And and because I was sincere about that listening, I think the people there very quickly kind of realized, okay, great, this is someone we can work with and we're willing to work with, and so let's go for it. I do remember them being very surprised when we came back after the first Christmas. So we'd been there a year, and we came back after our Christmas holidays. you still want to be here? You still want to live with us? Oh, absolutely. But anyway, that's another story. I think it's interesting reading your book, Flexibility, though, Karen. You know, that was certainly a very flexible kind of having to adapt, but that's I think really did serve myself as well as everyone there quite well in that context.
Okay, so what was next after that?
So I suppose after that I did some community development work for World Vision, which was just incredible in terms of a leading world-leading community development organisation. They were also working in Central Australia and the Kimberleys. So I was keen to be involved with those programs and was fortunate to be able to do that. At that time, I had no particular desire to be in a leadership position, though I was project managing. And then following that, I had the opportunity to manage the Alice Springs Aquatic and Leisure Centre. So, and that was, once again, that was probably a formational time in terms of, I suppose, arriving with there'd been a series of managers who'd lasted between about 2 to 12 months for a number of years, but a solid team of coordinators and team leaders at the next level who were very committed to the centre, but, you know, on the edge of burnout, very frustrated, quite dysfunctional in many ways. And the centre in many ways too reflected that, unfortunately, because, that just... there's only so long that a team can keep the smile on the sort of on the face of things, but be hurting inside before that starts to affect customer service, etc. But essentially, with that role, there were so many transferable skills from the time at Nepabunna. I'd done my community development study. I'd matured a little bit as a person, and that's also, I'd gone through what they call the Arrow Leadership Program as well while I was at World Vision, and that wasn't a World Vision run thing. That's a program that still happens today, around 30 emerging Christian leaders. Some are church-based, but others are just in executive roles from all around Australia. Mm-hmm. Take part of that two-year program. And servant leadership is a real... I suppose that gets some focus in that program. So I came into that role at the Alice Springs Aquatic and Leisure Centre, kind of keen and ready to apply some of this stuff and with a bit more intent. And that's where, not going to pretend it was all smooth sailing, but we consistently were able to, just move a number of things forward, but in particular the culture of the organisation and the reputation of the centre in Alice Springs. And we can talk a little bit about how, but, I'd give a lot of credit to the servant leadership approach there. Had a brief, had a year of acting as a director at Alice Springs Town Council, which was, just a wonderful experience. Family was feeling the desire to be closer to extended family, which is all down in Adelaide. Most recently I've been a manager, operations manager at Venture Pathways for Baptist Care SA. We've got the biggest campsite in South Australia that has 10,000 young people come through here every year and have an experience and memories and lessons that they'll remember for the rest of their life. That's a bit of my journey today.
And I noticed in your current role the title there is operations manager of Adventure, and I imagine that many people would some degree of envy about having a job that has a title like that.
It's a wonderful amazing team, amazing work. I would say it's a unique industry. It's been an eye-opener, but a wonderful experience for sure.
So listen, you mentioned that you can come back and talk some more about the experience at the leisure centre, and I'd like to do that because I think one of the things that is very much front of mind for people right now is that whole question about culture and building and really embedding the right kind of culture and working with people who are experiencing burnout or close to it, or at least feeling a bit tired, exhausted and over it. So I am really interested if you could tell us a little bit more about, just how you kind of engaged yourself in that workplace, what you noticed, how you noticed it, and what were some of the, the tools, the tactics or the, practices that you put into place. How did you use this much deeper wisdom and understanding about servant leadership to really make that difference?
Yeah, no, really good question, Karen. I think that, so when we're talking about servant leadership, we're talking about the leader at their core thinking of themselves as a servant to the organisation, to the people they lead, as well as to the people that the organisation serves. So that's directed in a few different ways, but there's also I suppose, a fundamental belief that that the best way to get results from people, or for people to thrive in their work, is to be led by someone with a servant leadership mindset. And that is someone who is saying, what do you need to do your best work? The best work of your career, potentially. You know, everyone, if they're honest, like they want to deliver great results. They want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. But I think, we've all experienced leaders who help that or hinder it, depending on how they choose to interact. I think in a helpful way, like at Nepabunna, at the Aquatic and Leisure Centre, there was one lady in particular who's the current manager, actually. She followed me into that role. But she'd been there for a lot of years, is highly renowned in the aquatics industry nationally. And, so very quickly you realise, wow, I've got an expert on my team. And so even as you go into that new team setting, you're quickly working out, I suppose where all the power lies. And I think a certain leader wants to give people power and share power in a way that and align that power to a bigger goal. So I very quickly realised, wow, here's this wonderful woman, Patina, who's got expert power in aquatics. Oh, and here's our operations and maintenance coordinator, who knows this centre and all the back rooms better than anyone else. Fantastic. And so just going through the team like that, and I would say that what was very important quickly was to, and this isn't just for someone who wants to lead out of a servant leadership philosophy, but servant leadership is helpful with this, is like you're checking your ego at the door real fast. Like you're just aware, whatever I bring in terms of my own ego is probably going to be unhelpful for anything that we want to achieve as a team. And so with that checked at the door, it means also that all of a sudden, all of the issues that were facing the centre, they weren't my issues to solve now. They were our issues to solve. And and we went as far too, like the key user groups there. So, I suppose in a business setting, we're talking about the key customers, the key stakeholders, like they were disgruntled and frustrated, and their feedback wasn't being heard. They were being all this stuff. And I remember bringing them together at what became a regular user group meeting, and very quickly also including them in solving the issues, to say, hey, thank you. I've listened. And together over the next 12 to 24 months, I want to solve all of this stuff with you. So coming back to just very quickly though, like that alignment piece, I think there's many people who will be listening to this who've also done this over and over successfully. But what I have found, and particularly at the Aquatic and Leisure Centre, aligning people to a why, that big reason, is critical to be able to move things forward. So at World Vision, what was interesting is a secret to their successful community development across all sorts of different contexts globally is that they make children the why for the community. So it's all about the children. And then all of a sudden, families who haven't talked together, people who hate each other, people who, all this sort of thing. Okay, for the children, I'll check my ego, essentially. Mm-hmm. So we very quickly, I suppose, and certainly I was communicating this and the team was receptive, but we very quickly reminded ourselves that we are not here for me or for you. We're here for the community. And we started to tell stories about, really, why are you here? Like, why did you get into aquatics in the first place? Why are you at this workplace and not somewhere else? And, people would tell, these stories about For example, very quickly, family members who drowned needlessly because they hadn't learned how to swim. Now that's a massive why.
Huge,
wow.
Yes.
You're going to be a part of preventing that. For other people in Alice Springs, Alice Springs is a wonderfully culturally diverse town. It's the pool is one of the few places in town where people from, New Zealand, from India, from America, from Australia, and all the Aboriginal language groups just come together and enjoy a public space together. So, so that was a drive for some people. And so tapping into that stuff and then, I suppose, elevating that, the other-centeredness of that. And I think also what was helpful in terms, because you can talk the talk, but very practically, as I think through what do people need to do their best work, in my experience, without wanting to simplify things too much, like direct reports, like they need their supervisor's attention. They don't need to be babied or, they certainly don't need to be micromanaged.
apparently they don't care, Simon. None of us do.
The number of times I've come into a workplace or had a new employee start and just be amazed that I'm giving them a one-on-one, like setting up a fortnightly one-on-one meeting to work through, KPIs. But, the first question is just being, how are you going? And another question being, what barriers are you experiencing at the moment? And then a servant leader very quickly with the barriers works out whether they can, remove that barrier or not, or at least get shoulder to shoulder. So, it's just long story short, at the pool, I think the coordinators, or that level that was directly reporting to me, very quickly came to understand, all right, well, here's Simon, and he has a role as the manager. He has certain decisions and delegations, and there's an element of positional power, but I don't see him using the positional power card to get things done. I see him taking an interest. I see him listening. I see him advocating for us as a centre, back to decision makers, budget, etc. So over time, that does create a huge change culturally. And certainly in my experience too, it's very hard for a manager or, someone, an executive, to influence the culture like two or three or four levels down if that's not taken care of in the immediate level, and that's cascading. So even though a servant leader doesn't like to see themselves at the top of the pyramid, I think, as you go on, you realise, you have influence. I'm going to influence people one way or the other. Many of your listeners would know, Karen, the way that a leader expresses emotion, what a leader gets upset about or celebrates, all those little messages and indicators are oozing cultural signals for better or worse. So I think the servant leader thing certainly was helpful in that it aligned well with the service orientated why. But I'd say that in a for-profit setting, if the only motivation is profit, like it's probably, I think Simon Sinek could say the same thing, like it's not a big enough why. Like, how is the product changing people's lives or changing the world to make it a better place? And then understanding that, as a leader, I can't, I want to have a positive impact on as many people as I can, but I can't, you can't run an aquatic and leisure centre on your own. You can't run a campsite on your own, like the school camps we have here, it takes, at least 20 staff every single camp to give a child an experience they'll never forget for the rest of their life. I want to be a part of making that impact, but I need 20 people to be on the same page about why we're here and everyone to play their role. And everyone plays their role a lot better if there's a sense that, okay, the leader's about what the work that we're doing, not about you know, making things easy for them, or you know, having some sense of power, which is, maybe traditionally what a lot of people have experienced.
Yeah. And I think it is really interesting. It's a fantastic story there. And I've heard you talk about, I think, appreciating people. The first thing that you really talked about was appreciating the value that they bring and where they come from and what their, their interest is in their role, you know, that alignment to why hearing their stories and giving them your attention, that's all about them. And so, as you say, you need to check your ego at the door and you need to manage your own need for power and think about how you, express or exercise your power. So for you, what's key to you about how you do keep your ego in check?
Yeah, sure. I think in different settings, I'm not perfect at this. But probably some warning signs now internally even recently, I was a little bit short with a colleague in a meeting twice in the same meeting, and the day after I apologized to him just being frank and keeping short accounts is important, but. But little things like that where you're reflecting. So like it's sometimes hard to have a reflective practice as a leader, even though I think most strong leaders would have something in place. But just to see being aware of, why didn't I listen? Why wasn't I respectful in my tone? Where's that coming from? There's ancient Christian, but even in other faiths, teaching about what comes out. There's a source or a well that comes from within, and when we're squeezed, depending on what's within, something beautiful or something ugly is coming out. So there's a bit of that. I think also, like just coming right back to that value of service. A really helpful thing for me, and I'm not sure exactly when this kicked in, but there was a time when I realized that as a leader, I have a duty to serve the organization. Mm. I think as a young leader, it can be really confusing sometimes about, am I here to serve my team or am I here to serve the organization? And my experience is that, any management or executive that I've ever reported to, they like to know that that you understand that the organisation is your primary responsibility, and I think that's fair. But just coming back to that, so for me to achieve things as much as possible or as much good as possible for the organisation, what would the most effective way of leading be? And I think this is where it's helpful to separate out. Like situational leadership is really helpful, and I don't think that's not congruent with servant leadership. I'd see servant leadership and that philosophy as a deep-seated philosophy and set of values, where I'd see situational leadership as a set of leadership skills. Yeah. And so in that sense, as a servant leader, you're saying, what does this situation need from me? And I suppose as a part of that, listening and checking in with people, you can work out quite quickly whether a direct report is coming to you because they just need someone to listen, or whether they're coming to you because the level of decision or the complexity of the decision that they're faced with, they're actually wanting someone to share the load or the manager to guide them or even make the decision at times. So it's sensing what is needed. It's also a helpful thing was I at the Aquatic and Leisure Centre, I fired someone within the first couple of weeks. Right. You say, how does that congruent with servant leadership?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Didn't you offer them some support and, you know, sort of tell them what was wrong and then give them a second or third chance to, and all that sort of thing? But no, like, yeah, the person, like their work was terrible. I let them know, politely, but clearly. And then there was a compliance, issue, which I won't go into the details of, but you know, they breached the code of conduct. They knew what the consequences were if they did that. And yeah, unfortunately through their own doing, they put me in a position where I had no choice. Now, having said that, that person had been on the team before I arrived for over 6 months, and the whole rest of the team is going, oh man, like this, they're getting away with murder. Why is no one doing anything, et cetera. And so just taking one step back, for me, I was able to feel comfortable, even though I had to be directive and certainly be the boss in a traditional way, because in the back of my mind, I'm going, you know what? It is a shame for this person of being clear. And by dealing with the issue, it's actually going to serve the whole team in moving forward. So I suppose I just tell that story because I do think that sometimes people think servant leadership, does that mean, you know, like you're washing everyone's feet and giving them a massage as they, you know, just before they go to their lunch break, you know, 5 minute shoulder back, all that? No, of course not. But it's, but it is, yeah, understanding that and believing at your core, I'm here to serve, and I've got gifts and a role as a leader, and without being arrogant, would want to say to people listening who've got leadership gifts and abilities and skills, that is something unique that you bring to the team. Not everyone has that. But in the same way that you're bringing that uniqueness, everyone else is bringing something unique too. And if our vision's big enough, in terms of what we're trying to change, what we're trying to influence in the world, it'll take more than one person.
I think that's a really important clarification, because I think one of the concerns that people have when they look at servant leadership is, you know, it's all about serving. Well, hang on, what about performance? And what about strategy? And what about getting things done? But so I think your example illustrates really nicely how it's not about giving up. Servant leadership is not about giving up on performance or strategy or making some tough decisions. Mm-hmm. But that focus, if you can focus on, you know, the individual serving their needs, serving the organization's needs, you know, as the overarching frame for that, then sometimes it means that you've got to make decisions about, you know, letting people go or giving, you know, uncomfortable feedback or making those changes in work plans and programs. You don't, you know, you're not a doormat and going to be, you know, walked all over. Yep. It is, as service is a very powerful way of thinking about how you kind of show up and engage yourself at work.
Yeah, I would mention, Karen, too, that customer feedback, at least in the context that I've led in, has been a key to that alignment piece as well.
Yep.
So what's wonderful about that is it's not just Simon saying we should do this or we need to do that. It's having a simple system for getting as much customer feedback as you can, having a standardized format for that, a way that you can track that, you know, week to week or month to month, and report back to the whole team. And, in this setting, every term we have a kickoff with the whole team there. We, our KPIs when it comes to feedback on all the domains are at least a 9 out of 10 or above. So, you know, that's a pretty high bar. And almost all those domains we exceed that 9 out of 10, and some of them were, you know, about an 8.6. But what's great is I can put that up in front of everyone and say, you know, like in your induction, you know, we talked about what winning looks like. As far as feedback goes, here's all the positive stuff. But here, you know, this isn't me. This is our customers or our guests' experience speaking here. Mm-hmm. And coming back to, so I've got some ideas, but it's actually our problem. It's not just my problem. And so let's work it out. And what's been wonderful is to see how, you know, good people thrive with that kind of problem to solve. So, you know, our catering coordinator, our programs manager, our maintenance coordinator, you know, all those people are like, they understand the scores and how they can directly influence them. And so then, you know, my role, instead of becoming, you know, instead of being the leader that needs to have all the answers and then directing people to do stuff, even if those people don't think it's a good idea, those problems become things to solve together, and even become things that you can 6 months later say in front of the whole team, look at that score, it's gone from it. You know, we were sitting at 8.6 for 12 months and now we're up to 9.1. And that was all because of, and I'm not pointing at myself, you know, you're pointing at the person who influenced the thing. You know, and that's, I think that's a really positive and powerful thing if you can generate that.
What's next for you? Because I understand that you're about to take on a new role. So tell us just a little about, I mean, not such the role itself, but I think, how do you think you'll be able to continue this journey that you've been on around developing and expressing your servant leadership style?
Yeah, thanks, Karen. The next thing is we are moving back to Alice Springs with the family for a role, senior management role around infrastructure and capital projects for a large Aboriginal controlled health organisation. So, really looking forward to that. A lot of those reasons are personal in terms of wanting to, you know, but both for the organisation as well as the location. But, I would mention that the sustainability of impact being a really important thing. And I suppose one thing that forces you to reflect on the impact you're having is when you're considering moving on and, you know, coming back to service, you know, will the team, how will that impact the team and the work? And you have to come to a point where you realize, you know what, you are replaceable. There's someone, you know, just as committed and probably even more capable who could, follow. But even just reflecting with direct reports this week, as I've been letting them know the news, I've been quite, humbled and just blown away at what has made an impact on them in mm-hmm. this time. And the feedback overwhelmingly has been, we've just really appreciated how you've let us get on with our work, or we've really appreciated, we've sensed your support, but we've also never had so much space to just do what we need. And like that's with people who've been here for 15 years. So it's not, you know, a new employee that needs a lot of training and recruiting. So just to say that, in this current role, like there hasn't been, I suppose, an impact through longevity, and that's a concern, because, you know, even though you're leading out of the servant leadership philosophy, you don't want to waste your time. Time's precious, and you want to make an impact. But it's been refreshing to hear that in a relatively short time, which has been around 2.5 years in this current role, the people closest to me that have been directly reporting have really noticed the contrast from being led in all kinds of traditional models, or people leading not even really conscious of how they're going about it.
Compared to
someone intentionally coming into just serve and help them do the best work they've ever done. Now, I'm not saying that they've achieved the best work they've ever done in the last 2.5 years, but that's just something we've talked about a lot. Is to say, you know, wow, we've got an amazing team here. What's stopping us right now from doing the best work that we've ever done? So hopefully with this next role, especially being an Aboriginal controlled health organisation, we'll certainly want to bring the listening. I know that there's a fair bit of system stuff to bring in there. And so, simple things rather than just implementing the system that I know will work. let's actually see what the different stakeholders need, you know. What does the CEO need, you know, on her reports? What do people in communities need, you know, in terms of their feedback and, you know, the service provision and et cetera from their facilities? So, yeah, we'll bring more of that with a smaller team, though, so which it will be fine for a season. Yeah, so for a little while, the work will get more technical. And bigger dollars, which will be a great experience, and the team leadership stuff. I say it should be simple, but teams always have people in them, don't they? And there's there's a bit of a joke sometimes. Got to be careful where you say it, but you just go, "Well, I love my team. I just wish it didn't have any people in it. It'd be perfect otherwise." That's not true of my current team. They're a wonderful team, but yeah, looking forward to all of that.
Yeah. We might actually just delete that little bit about the just
That's fine.
Because the only reason I'm saying that is people in your next job.
Oh, yes, that. Thank you. Yes.
Right.
You're so kind, Karen. Thank you.
That's
wisdom. Wisdom.
Yeah, no worries. Okay. So in summary, one of the things I'm interested in is lessons, Simon, that you would like to provide to, you know, other leaders earlier in their career or leaders who are thinking about, you know, culture and issues associated with cultures differently, thinking about reflecting on their own style and perhaps interested in doing something that is a more servant leadership in style. I mean, what recommendations would you give to them? What feedback or suggestions would you provide to them?
Oh, sure. I definitely don't feel qualified enough to do that, but I'll give it
are. I think the reason I asked you the question is that you're more than qualified, Simon.
I think maybe a helpful thing would be to come back to the reason why we want to lead in the first place. And there's all sorts of motivations which are worthy and noble and valid. But I think that why is important because a healthy leader will be able to not lead and be okay with it.
Okay.
Whereas I do think that sometimes where things get a little bit dysfunctional or unhelpful from a team point of view is when the leader needs something from the team in terms of validation, sense of power, etc. So I think when we come back to the why, a lot of that why often for a good leader will come back to wanting to make a difference or an impact of some kind. And that could be just for their own family, and that's great. It could be something bigger for the world or the community, or customers, you know. And I think when we come down to that why, the next logical question to ask then is, so what is the most effective way for me to impact this team towards that why, that bigger why, and to do so in a sustainable way? So a challenge for leaders, I think, in general is, when we're judged on the near-term result, we can start to do all sorts of things. Like, we've got all these levers to pull to meet that result. But it's worth thinking, and this is something that actually it was the Aboriginal people at Nepabunna helped me think through, was just around, you know, what we're doing today, how does that make a difference in 1 month? Is it positive or negative? How does it make a difference in 12 months, you know, with that compounding? Is that positive or negative? And, you know, and maybe out to 3 to 5 years at least. And hopefully we have the luxury as leaders to be in the long game, or a slightly longer game. because when we're thinking about the long game, we're, you know, the people who are here under our leadership become central. Like, you know, good people become central to that. So, and most good people, while they'll put up with a lot, like I'm sure we all have, but so have the people that we're leading now. At different times, they've put up with much worse leaders than myself, and you know, the listeners, that they've also probably had much better at one time, and so be it, because we're not all perfect. But certainly personally, people only remember how you made them feel, and it's worth just being aware of that. And good people will respect frank feedback. they'll respect, you know, being coached. They'll probably appreciate being coached, to be honest. What's that taste that we're leaving in people's mouth after our number of interactions? And certainly from my perspective, servant leadership leaves the right taste. The last thing, and I'm probably talking too long now, Karen, but when you think about all the significant movements, like really world-changing movements, think of what Nelson Mandela did, think of what Martin Luther King Jr. did, Gandhi, there's many more. But you just go, wow, how did that person have such an impact on so many people? And it comes back to service. Like they believed wholeheartedly in what they did. They had no power. Like there was a time when they had zero power,
mm-hmm.
but from a position of service, one by one, by 100, by 100, by 1,000, by 1,000, convinced a lot of people that this why is worth collectively.
Great. Thank you. And what else, just as we finish up, what last piece of advice or some thoughts around leadership and servant leadership in your journey would you like to finish with?
I think for me, a really influential piece of writing or figure was Jesus himself. And in Matthew chapter 20, he talks about, and he's talking to the people he's leading, and he says, you know that the rulers lord it over them. They're high officials. They exercise authority over the people, but not so with you. Instead, if you want to become great, you must be a servant. If you want to be first, you must put yourself last. Just as I came not to be served, but to serve and to give my life for others. So that's worthy of thought, regardless, I think, of our, religious or faith background, whether it's there or not. There's a really influential servant leader who's probably impacted history, modern history, more than any other figure in the past few thousand years. So, an ancient idea with a lot of contemporary promise and fruit. So I suppose a final encouragement too would be, as leaders, let's all have a leadership philosophy. Even if it's not servant leadership, but let's lead on purpose and know and be aware of why we're doing what we're doing. And I hope for some people that there's been some encouragement or inspiration towards servant leadership and all the great resources that are out there.
brilliant. I mean, I love that. That's a great way to finish. A very nice sort of quote, but also that focus on just having a leadership philosophy and leading intentionally on purpose, whether that's, as a servant leader or something else, that is just such great advice. So, Simon, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts in this podcast and for coming along and playing and having the conversation. It's been fantastic listening to your experiences and your wisdom. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. It's been a real privilege.